Lying in his bed, he heard music from far away. To him, the music seemed to fill the endless rooms and passageways of Udolpho like a sweet-scented but poisonous gas, drifting with invisible malevolence through the towers and turrets, suites and stables, garrets and gables of the immense, rambling, mostly derelict estate. Down in the great hall, the harpsichord was being played, not well, but with a sorcerer's enthusiasm. Christabel, dark daughter of Ravaglioli and Flaminia, with her supple hands and sinister smile, was practicing. It was a dramatic piece, expressing violent emotions. Melmoth Udolpho understood violent emotions. Thanks to Dr. Valdemar's potions and infusions, he was a prisoner in his own shrunken body, his brain a spark of life in an already rotting corpse. But he still had violent emotions. He thought again of his will. Poor Genevieve must come out, or she would hold up the succession forever. She was fresh now, but, like him, she would live long. Too long. Pintaldi must be recognised as Melmoth's grandchild in order to pass the fortune on to his current favourites, the twins. Young Melmoth was the purest Udolpho of the lot of them, and Flora could make a grand consort for him when he grew up and took his position in the world. Only the long-gone Montoni, whose bastard Pintaldi claimed to be, could possibly have matched him. A few nights ago, young Melmoth and Flora had surprised Myra, one of the maids, and tied her up. They had placed a mouse on her stomach, and then clapped a cup over the animal, fixing it in place with a scarf. After an hour, the mouse had got hungry and tried to eat the soft floor of its cell. Young Melmoth thought that a fine experiment and had kissed Flora on the lips to celebrate its success. They were of Montoni's line, undoubtedly, although Ulrich alone knew what their mother had been. This will must reflect the purity of Udolpho blood. Several times in past centuries, brothers had married sisters, cousins married cousins, simply to keep the blood pure. Old Melmoth was nearly blind, but he hadn't left his bed in perhaps 30 years, and didn't need his sight. He knew where the curtains hung around him, and where his tray was placed each day. He could no longer taste food, and his sense of smell was also completely gone. He couldn't lift his limbs more than an inch or two, and only then with great effort, or even raise his head from its deeply grooved pillow. But he could still hear. If anything, his hearing was sharper than it had been when he was younger. He heard everything that went on within the walls of Udolpho. In the ruined West Wing, where the roofs were gone and the exquisite mosaic floors designed by his mad great-uncle Gesualdo were open to the elements, wolves sometimes came to root around. In the stables, flies still buzzed around the neglected and dying horses. In the cellars, rats scratched against old oak doors, wriggling between the bones of forgotten prisoners. And in her rooms, poor Matilda, her swollen head almost insupportable, sometimes raged against her fate, smashing the furniture and attacking the servants with an energy old Melmoth could only envy. There must be provision in the will for Matilda. So long as she remained human, she would be a beneficiary. In the darkness, that was forever before his face, a light appeared. It was small at first, but it grew. The light was blue and sickly, and there was a face in it. A familiar face. A long nose and sunken hollows where eyes had been. Old Melmoth recognised the features of his eldest son.
Montoni,
he gasped, his papery throat spitting out the name like a hairball. The rightful heir to the house of Udolpho vanished into stormy night 60 years earlier, looked down at the ruin of his father, and his empty eye sockets filled with pity. Old Melmoth's face cracked as he smiled. His gums hurt. Not yet. He wasn't ready yet. He clung to his bedclothes as he clung to life. There was more to be done, more to be changed. He was not ready to die.